You're listening to Soundcheck. You're listening to Sound with John Schaefer. You're listening to Soundcheck. You're listening to Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Welcome to another edition of the Soundcheck podcast. Today, we're going to indulge in one of the great pastimes of music history buffs everywhere, the game of What If? See, Thursday marks the 50th anniversary of the Rolling Stones' first gig. It took place at the Marquee Club in London, July 12th, 1962. The band called itself the Rollin', no G, the Rolling Stones. And they couldn't possibly have known that they would outlast their contemporaries and continue rolling even as senior citizens. But what if, again, playing our little history game, what if the Rolling Stones had taken a cue from the Beatles and called it quits in 1970? What if their catalog had ended with Let It Bleed? We're going to hear from some of you in a moment, but first joining me today in our alternate universe is our old friend Anthony DeCurtis, contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine. Anthony, good to see you.
Always a pleasure, John.
So, 50th anniversary of what? Who were the Rolling Stones on July 12, 1962?
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, of the original lineup of the band, it was Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Brian Jones, and Ian Stewart, you know, who was their original piano player and organ player, and who eventually was asked to leave the performing element of the band because he didn't have the right profile, but he ended up becoming the band's road manager and continued to play with the band throughout the years. And then there were a couple of other guys. There was a guy named Dick Taylor who later went on to one of the founding members of the Pretty Things. And you know, at this stage of things, there were a lot of, I mean, the Rolling Stones, as you accurately pointed out, were really in a process of forming. But this moment, you know, they took that name. It was a situation where we have to call ourselves something, and that was that. And, that was the gig. And the Marquee Club, you know, became one of their hot spots, mm-hmm. One of the places where the Stones really, began to build their audience.
So bass player Bill Wyman would join shortly, and Charlie Watts, the drummer, who they wanted. I mean, Keith Richards talks about this in his book, the fact that they really wanted Charlie because he was a pro. They didn't get him for another year.
Well, right. And, you know, everybody was doing all kinds of gigs. Now, Charlie would sit in with them occasionally, but, you know, he couldn't really commit. I think, you know, he'd done some gigs with them, and I think formally committed in January of 63.
Yeah.
And I think Bill Wyman did it right around the same time, the bass player.
So let's play our little game. It's 50 years since they've started. What if they, like the Beatles, had broken up in 1970? Where would that have left us?
Well, I want to start that question though. I want to address a certain thing, which is, first of all, the Rolling Stones would still be just an absolute legendary, a band of just enormous importance. That would have happened if they had broken up in 1965. I mean, their early records, yeah, I think are just absolutely essential to what rock and roll eventually became.
So even without Honky Tonk Women, Paint It Black, Street Fightin' Man, Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Yeah, absolutely. Those early kind of blues-oriented records. I mean, look, I had an occasion, I mean, recently interviewed Mick Jagger, and you know, I was telling him, look, you know, when I was a kid, it was those early records that led me back to the blues. I mean, those first few albums were like these anthologies of American blues and R&B that a white kid, even in New York City, would just have no idea about. So, I mean, they were very important for that reason, but also the Stones as performers had already kind of defined themselves, you know?
So now you were talking about the Stones as musicians, as you say, as performers. Not necessarily as songwriters, because that comes later.
That's right. That's very true. You know, we got some early stuff. I mean, in 1965, I think we could still squeeze, you know, The Last Time and Satisfaction in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the other early, like Tell Me. those kind of classic Stone songs like Honky Tonk Women and, certainly Gimme Shelter, for example, would you know, come later.
So if in this alternate reality, the Beatles and the Stones both break up in 1970, we still get to have everything up to Let It Bleed, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Missing, therefore, I think the Stones are an essential band for this transition of the 60s into the 70s. I mean, I think of those four records, you know, Beggar's Banquet in 68, Let It Bleed in 69, Sticky Fingers in 71, and Exile on Main Street in 72 as this perfect transition from 1968 to 1972.
You can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, well, you might find you get what you need.
I mean, those were critical years. You know, the high utopian hopes of the 60s were receding, and the Stones were really coming into their element. I mean, all of their hard-nosed pragmatism, their cynicism, you know, their kind of self-involvement and their swagger, all of those elements would be essential to what the 70s were, and we would have none of them.
Hmm.
You know, Exile on Main Street, you know, one of the greatest albums in the history of rock and roll, we would not have it. You know,
right.
So we would be missing a lot.
We're speaking with Anthony DeCurtis. He's contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine and also on the Soundcheck podcast to some of you. And joining us on the line is Patrick. He's in Des Moines, Iowa. Patrick, we're just kind of throwing out the year 1970 because that's when the Beatles call it quits. Do you have any ideas of things around that time that might actually have caused the Rolling Stones to go in a different direction?
Well, of course, in December of 1969, the Stones put on their famous concert at Altamont, which of course ended in a tragedy,
right?
And like
the
other
murder,
tragedy,
the stabbing of one of their patrons, one of their
choosing the Hells Angels as your security guards might have forced the Stones to call it a day, and you can see that in the movie Gimme Shelter,
right?
How it does affect Mick Jagger and the rest of the gang.
Yeah, I mean, the final scene, you know, Mick Jagger has just finished watching the replay of the stabbing.
Yes.
And the final scene is him turning away, walking towards the camera. Well, I'll see y'all, with this kind of look on his face of like, I don't know how to process what I've just seen.
Yeah, there are things in that movie that, I mean, I think are so vivid and are able to be found almost nowhere else. I mean, the Stones, I mean, are so commanding. And I have to say, I mean, after a lifetime of interviewing rock stars and stuff, that Mick Jagger is probably the single most self-possessed person I've ever met. To see them on stage at Altamont just completely having lost control is still shocking, you know, and it's still something that, you know, especially now with shows being as staged as they are, you know, it's something that you'll probably, maybe, thank goodness, ever see again.
So and that was December of 69.
Yeah.
Completely plausible to think that New Year comes and they look at each other and say, never again. We're done.
Well, also, you know, the Keith's drug problems, you know, were beginning to have an impact. I mean, you know, during the recording of Exile on Main Street, there were all these, you know, the famous story of, you know, they were recording a lot in Keith's house in the south of France. And you know, Keith saying, oh, you know, I'm just going to go put Marlon to bed. And then they wouldn't see him again for 2 days, you know. That was the first sense. And I think in a lot of ways, Exile on Main Street, among its many other interesting aspects, is it widely regarded as Keith's album. But it is also a record about Mick commenting on the potential loss of Keith. You know, what's the matter with the boy? He don't come around no more. Guess he's checking out for sure. Is he going to close the door on me? You know, there's this kind of sense of, you know, the absence of this key figure. And you know, we'd go for decades now waiting for something to happen with Keith, and he's still doing just fine. But,
right,
you know, that was one of the first moments where it seemed like he might be checking out for sure, as Mick put it.
David sends this comment on our Facebook page. With no Sticky Fingers or Exile, I know that I would probably have had different musical taste. Something about those albums hooked me on that strange mashup of blues, soul, country, rock. I have spent my life looking for albums with that perfect mix and have yet to find any that speak to me quite like those two do.
Just put it clean right off the street.
Torn and Frayed is from the 1972 album Exile on Main Street by the Rolling Stones. Of course, there is no Exile on Main Street in our little
alternate universe. Yes, exactly.
Anthony DeCurtis, contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine, frequent guest on Soundcheck, with me in the studio today. And we are marking the occasion of the 50th anniversary of the Rolling Stones by imagining what would have happened, or not happened, if the Rolling Stones had followed the Beatles into some netherworld of being broken up and no longer making records in 1970. So you'd have everything up to Let It Bleed, which would include the last album that Brian Jones, the original guitarist, made with the Stones before his death in 1969.
Indeed.
So you'd have the very beginnings of the Mick Taylor period.
Which is, again, you know, a definitive kind of rock and roll period. In many ways, I mean, there are people who believe, possibly myself among them, that that was the strongest era of the Stones mm-hmm. musically. You know, this incredible kind of skill and lyricism and virtuosity against
Keith. Effortless.
Yeah.
It seemed effortless for Mick Taylor.
I mean, just listening to that, you know, Torn and Frayed, I mean, the Stones, I mean, they always just sound so raw. You know, there's a kind of... You know, the harmonies are messy, the timing is off, but it's just perfect. God, how great that sounds.
Soundcheck listeners, we're live on WNYC.org today, so if you want to join the conversation, you can call us, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692, or leave a comment on our webpage, WNYC.org. We're giving you a chance to get in on the conversation today, and Jack is on the line with us from Astoria in Queens. Jack, we've been talking a couple of moments ago about the Stones, the Altamont, live performances. Have you seen the band live?
Yeah, I saw them live about 6 years ago in Germany, in Munich.
Uh-huh. And
I didn't really know what to expect from the gig because I thought that it was just going to be these old guys who just really couldn't hack it anymore.
Uh-huh.
And I was really amazed by the show that they put on, and they were great. I was really blown away by it, and they looked like they were having a great time up there. And the group that went on before them, which was Star Sailor from UK, they're probably about my age, and they weren't nearly as energetic or as showmanship as the Stones. I was really blown away by it.
When you say your age, how old are you?
30.
Okay, so the Stones for you are kind of a legacy act, right? I mean, which era of the Rolling Stones did you grow up listening to?
Well, I heard them a lot through my parents on classic rock, so they played a lot of stuff from Sticky Fingers, and they played a lot of the hits like Satisfaction. So I guess it was like the late 60s, early 70s that they played the most, and then like some of the stuff from the 80s as well, like Start Me Up.
Mm-hmm. So it far from being the sort of generation gap that we heard all about when the Stones were in their first flowering, for you, Jack, it sounds like the Stones are kind of a family affair.
Well, my grandfather hated them, and my parents...
There you are. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. He just couldn't understand it. And my parents loved them. And just listening to all that stuff growing up, it just sort of seeped into me. And, you know, I had to find out for myself. But, yeah, they were fantastic. They certainly are deserving.
All right. Jack, thanks for the call. Anthony, what about this sort of unusual, it's a function of their longevity, you know?
I think it is. And it's also a function of what they do live. You know, I've kind of stopped having this conversation about, you know, when people say, oh, you know, the Stones are touring, you know, they're old, you know. Go see the show.
I've always said everyone should see the Stones live once before they die.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can take they in any number of ways.
Well, like precisely. But they still play like a band, you know?
Yeah. Do they play like a band, or has it gotten... Do they play like a corporate-sponsored machine at this point?
Well, I mean, I think it depends. You know, some of the stadium shows, I mean, I think... You know, in a stadium, it's very difficult to play in a loose way. I think the Stones push that as far as you can push that. But I remember seeing a show in Albany, you know, in an arena, whatever the last tour was. And it was really interesting to not see them around New York. And they were just roaring. Mm. I mean, it's like when, you know, our previous caller just said they were having a great time. I mean, they loved it.
Now, that's another thing. If the Stones had broken up in 1970, what would that have done to our experience of arena rock, of mega tours, of the kind of mega ticketed events that we see these days?
Well, it's interesting because I remember the Stones tour in 1969 as being the first really big. I think, you know, Blind Faith had maybe done an arena tour, but that was such a mess. Whereas the Stones tour in 1969, of course, which culminated in Altamont, but was such a big deal. And I think in a lot of ways that really was the birth of, you know, those big rock and roll shows, you know, because all the, you know, the Beatles were off the road and Dylan was off the road. And when the Stones came back in 69, it was important and it was fantastic, too, I might add.
So we're talking about what would have happened if the Rolling Stones had taken a page out of the Beatles handbook and broken up in 1970 after Let It Bleed, after this 1969 tour, after the Altamont tragedy, after the death of guitarist Brian Jones. We're speaking with Anthony DeCurtis, contributing editor to Rolling Stone. You can call us at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And producer Joel Meyer has some of your comments in the control room. Joel.
Well, John, speaking of the Beatles, I think that our listener Chris from Sunset Park, Brooklyn, has an interesting point. Chris writes, one of the reasons the Beatles are so beloved is that they never had a chance to release a truly bad album. Had the Rolling Stones broken up in 1970, I think they would have attained a more mythological status. Something about seeing an aging group of old men on stage takes away the mystique of their early years.
Well, now, there's a couple of interesting points there to follow up. First of all, the idea that the Beatles never had a chance to make a bad album.
That's very true.
The Stones had a chance, and they took it.
They took full advantage of it. That's very true.
I mean, you know, 1970s, we've talked so far about Exile on Main Street and Sticky Fingers. Those are two rockin' records.
Yeah. And
but
you also
get
Some Girls in there, too, which is a very good record.
But Some Girls, the thing that made Some Girls, for those of us who were Rolling Stones fans, Some Girls was like the resurrection, you know?
Because
they had just done Black and Blue.
They were over
and
30
Goat's
by that point. Yeah, right.
And they had done two records that were just like, what are you doing?
Well, I think that period was a very difficult one for everybody to kind of figure out. I mean, there really was everybody kind of washed up on the shores of the 70s. And the Stones had made their big statements. But it's true, you know, I mean, living contemporaneously with artists, I mean, this is a point that I make to people, you know, who have long careers, you know, I mean, it's very rare that, you know, somebody is just doing great work through their whole career. I mean, rare to the point of essentially a handful of people,
right.
I believe.
And there are even Dylan records
even
the most,
absolutely,
you know, the most apologist, you know, Dylan fanatic would have to admit is not.
Well, and very true. And, you know, it really is, you know, when you, but still that doesn't affect Dylan's stature or certainly the Rolling Stones stature.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you alter the course of popular music, you know, two or three times, you're in the pantheon, regardless of whatever you do afterwards. But it's true. You know, the Beatles had a very nice, concise, you know, 10-year run. They, you know, for the most part, made very, very, very strong work. And it's, you know, it has a beautiful kind of arc to it. You know, the Stones, as it is often with the Rolling Stones, are a lot messier and more complicated.
So if they stopped in 1970, we wouldn't get Exile on Main Street. We wouldn't get Sticky Fingers. We also wouldn't get Some Girls. And as our listener Scott says on our Facebook page, all the other stuff after the 70s was totally worth it for Some Girls alone. Sometimes the catcher calls for one pitch and the pitcher throws another. A little miscommunication.
I think we got one of those, the bad Rolling Stones.
Emotional Rescue, 1980, She's So Cold. This was a radio hit. I still don't know why.
Yeah, well, that song is so great. I mean, Jagger, I think, went through a period of being so bored with the Rolling Stones. I mean, that you get one song called, you know, She's So Cold, another one called She's What? She Was Hot.
She Was Hot.
It's just like, Mick, man, you know. Give me something here.
Well, let me give Scott a taste of what he was writing about on our Facebook page. From Some Girls, 1978 record in Shattered.
Surviving on the streets, look at me. I'm in tatters. I'm shattered. Shattered. Friends are so alarming, and my love is never charming. Life's just a cocktail party on the street. They got people dressed in plastic bags, directed traffic, some kind of fashion.
Shattered from Some Girls. Anthony DeCurtis, it's too bad we flipped those two songs because musically they're quite similar.
That's true.
You know, She's So Cold really kind of just like...
I think the difference is, you know, Jagger saying something in Shattered. You know, I mean, Some Girls, you know, for, you know, a show based here in New York for a station called WNYC, you know, Some Girls is one of the great New York records, and Shattered was kind of a New York theme song, you know, for a while.
It was, punk had come in,
changed
everything. It was the 70s in New York.
Exactly.
People felt kind of shattered just walking down the street. I mean, everything
Ford to City, Drop Dead.
Yeah.
You know, that was the era of, you know, New York under siege.
Yeah. And everything that Jagger is singing about, I mean, he and Keith were living in New York.
Yes.
I mean, it was just, yeah, that is a record I think a lot of us would be sad not to have if the
Absolutely.
Rolling Stones had broken up in 1970. Which is the thesis of our alternate universe edition of the Soundcheck podcast with Anthony DeCurtis of Rolling Stone magazine. What about, you know, we're talking about if the Beatles and the Stones had both broken up in 1970. The Beatles, of course, went off and did all their solo projects. So let's continue to imagine the Rolling Stones following them in that direction, and Mick doing solo stuff and Keith doing solo stuff, and no one really cares who else. I mean, Charlie has done some nice jazz things, but...
Well, you know, I mean, I think I don't know what we would have ended up with in that case, you know, because, I mean, Keith's solo records are a tremendous amount of fun, and seeing Keith and his band live was... I mean, I saw a Beacon show that was sensational, but, you know, you're in the back of your head, you're thinking the Rolling Stones, and you're filling in all the blanks, and... You know, without the Rolling Stones, those things would have been non-events. And Jagger solo records, unfortunately, I mean, while interesting to someone like me, who's kind of fascinated by him as a character, other than Wandering Spirit, which I think was a very good record, the other three are really problematic.
Here is Keith Richards, who, remember, actually has sung solo Rolling Stone songs on various records over the years. But here he is from his first solo record from 1988, Talk Is Cheap, and a song called Take It So Hard. Keith Richards from his solo record from 1988 called Talk Is Cheap. Now here's Mick Jagger with his super group called Super Heavy, featuring vocals by Joss Stone and Damian Marley. The song is Miracle Worker.
Yeah.
Well, just a hint of what we might have had more of had the Rolling Stones indeed broken up in 1970. Keith Richards' Take It So Hard is from his 1988 album Talk Is Cheap. And then Mick Jagger with Super Heavy and a song called Miracle Worker. That's a 2011 supergroup with Joss Stone. You also heard Damian Marley, A.R. Rahman, the Bollywood film composer, Dave Stewart of Eurythmics. So that was a real kind of supergroup thing.
And we should mention also, you know, I mean, Mick just did that thing on Saturday Night Live with Arcade Fire, which was really good, I thought.
And Foo Fighters.
Foo Fighters and Jeff Beck, too.
Yeah. And, you know, sort of showed himself to be kind of a good sport in addition
exactly.
to everything
I'm getting
else.
Getting sent up on in that scene where watching the person imitate Mick Jagger.
Yes, watching the karaoke.
Oh, it's
jazz.
Better than Mick Jagger. Yeah.
So we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Rolling Stones by wondering what would have happened if they'd broken up in, say, 1970. There have been, Anthony, numerous times during the years where it has seemed like maybe the band had broken up.
Oh, absolutely. Certainly in the 80s, right around the time of Keith's solo record. I mean, Keith had always said, I'll never make a solo record. I never want to be thinking, you know, should I keep this for myself or give it to the Stones? Whereas, you know, things had really fallen apart. You know, Jagger and Richards had very, very dramatically fallen out. And, you know, whether the Rolling Stones were ever going to go out and perform again. They didn't really perform. You know, I think it was between 82 and 89. You know, they went out with Steel Wheels in 89. So that was a tough period. They made a very good record during that period, I have to say, Dirty Work, which, you know, is not a masterpiece exactly, but, I mean, it's a tough, hard-hitting record that reflects all of those tensions. It's a very nasty sounding and nasty record. But they almost went down at that point.
Well, so now for the 50th anniversary, there are rumors of a tour, although it'll probably be next year, not this year.
Yes.
And have you heard anything about an album?
Well, you know, they're talking about stuff. You know, I mean, with the Stones, it's always step by step. You know, I mean, I really think, you know, I mean, talk about another problem. I mean, Keith's book, I think, was a big problem for Mick Jagger, you know, and that, you know, I think that was another moment at which, you know, there was a good chance that nothing ever was going to happen again. But they've come back around and, you know.
Well, Keith has apologized.
Yeah, and I think they're kind of raring up to see what's worked. You know, I think if they get together and write some songs, you know, there's going to be more activity, I think, than they're letting on. That's my sense. You know, from just what you hear and what you feel around that scene.
But if they had broken up in 1970, you're convinced they would still be in the Pantheon.
Oh, without question.
Their place would be secure.
Absolutely.
Anthony DeCurtis is contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine. Quick word here from Antonio in Mexico City. He writes, if they had broken up in 1970, he writes, and probably we wouldn't have gotten any biographies as cool as Keith Richards' life.
Very true.
But we still would have had this. From the album Let It Bleed, it's the Rolling Stones and their 1969 tune, Gimme Shelter. And if you missed any of today's live webcast with Anthony DeCurtis, we'll be posting the podcast on Thursday, the anniversary date, the 50th anniversary of the birth of the Rolling Stones. Anthony DeCurtis, great to have you with us once again on SoundCheck.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Our technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer. Today's Soundcheck jingle came from John McMahon. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.